New Edison podcast research has been released. Tip of the week, smart speaker ownership trends. And we're going to cover your feedback and comments on the show this week. Well, welcome to the Speaker Live Show. This is episode 109 on April 19th, 2017. I'm Rob Greenlee, the head of content at Spreaker. Thanks for downloading us or just clicking play to hear us today. This is one thing about podcasting and this show. We are accessible anywhere, anytime, as long as you have a digital device. You can get us in our own Spreaker live show app on iOS and Android. So you can certainly find us anytime and get directly access to the podcast help that we present each week on this show. So I'm joined again by my co-host, Mr. Alex XM, who's the host of the XM Experience podcast on Spreaker. Welcome, Alex. It's great to have you back.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me. As always, Rob.
Thank you. And we stream this show live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern from SpreakerLiveShow.com. So you can certainly find us right off of that website and hear us live every week. So, but we are going to take next week off because I'm actually going to be at the NAB show down in Las Vegas from the 23rd to the 27th. And NAB stands for National Association of Broadcasters. I'm going to be down there doing about three panel sessions, trying to educate and further the podcasting space a little bit with radio broadcasters down there. And hopefully we'll have some podcasters kind of attend that conference as well, since there is a history with podcasting at the National Association of Broadcasters. And there's a lot of talk that NAB, Alex, will be having a pavilion for podcasting next year. So it could be a big presence on the show floor next year too. And if you're not familiar with NAB, it's actually the largest broadcasting conference in the world. It's attended by maybe 115,000 people fly into Las Vegas and go to that event. Have you been to NAB, Alex?
No, I haven't been. I've been thinking about it going forward in the future, but I don't know if I'm ready for NAB yet. And that's a long one. That's a long conference. It's like a week-long conference.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it actually starts on the 22nd. I just happen to be getting down there on the 23rd. And I believe it goes completely through the 27th. I think the last thing ends on the 28th. So I'm actually escaping a little early. So you're exactly right. It's a big event, big conference. Yeah. down in Las Vegas. If you go to the show notes for this episode, you can get a link to go see the panel sessions that are going on down there about podcasting. There's like a half day track that's going on just focused on podcasting. That's something that some of us in the podcasting space have been pushing the NAB to do, and they're starting to do it. So it's exciting. And then I'm going to be going to the Pod Summit at podsummit.com in Calgary, Canada on May 6th. So I'm going to be flying a little bit north to go up there and see what that conference is going to be all about. So this is busy season. Once you get into spring and summer, there's a lot more podcasting events out there, Alex.
Yeah, I've never heard of Pod Summit until you mentioned it on this show. Like, there's so many new podcasting events, it seems like, right? A lot of regional ones. There's obviously the national ones, but there's a lot of little ones popping up all over.
Yeah, there is more events. I've been a little bit surprised. I mean, one of the key events, the New Media Europe Conference, speaking of kind of conferences outside of the U.S., is not going to be a conference this year. So it's kind of interesting that some of these other podcasting events are popping up in other countries like Canada, and there's been a flurry of podcasting events down in Australia. So podcasting is definitely picking up steam in a lot of other countries around the world. So it isn't just a U.S. phenomenon anymore. And Spreaker, being a European-based company, we want to be supportive of all these events around the world. So like I've said on the show in the past, there's a lot of activity in podcasting going on down in South America right now too. So it's a phenomenon that's spreading across the world. So
Because I worked in the trade show industry. I worked at one point for Reed Exhibition Companies, who does like all the major trade shows in a lot of different industry. And I just know the ins and out, the behind, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's put it that way. So for me, I've got to have a tangible goal, right, Rob? Like, I can't just go to, like, I'm not going to fly up to Canada, you know, personally, if I'm not really going to get anything out of it. Now, I could make some great connections. I could, you know, learn some new skills, grow my show, things like that, or maybe just get, you know, get word out about my own show. But like, I've got to really, if I'm spending money, especially if it's out of town, if it's local, it's different. But if on a hotel, the tickets, you know, eating, car rentals or Ubers, whatever, it can get costly, you know. And so for especially NAB, you know, getting into radio, when I'm full-fledged radio, then I think NAB's, you know, a little bit more geared towards me. They have a, I know they have podcasting there. Like Spreaker, you guys have to be at all these things, right? Because you're trying to get the users. But for a already someone who's already podcasting, I don't know if any, like, what am I going to get out of NAB? Am I going to meet somebody in radio? Like, what would be my goal? So I'd have to have a specific reason to go. Does that make sense? I mean, I know a lot of podcasters out there who are just doing their show, who want to grow it. Look at a lot of these that can be expensive. I mean, just the one out here in LA is like $400 for the ticket. You know, you gotta, what are you really trying to accomplish? If you're just trying to learn more podcasting, some of that stuff you can find through free resources. So I you know, I don't know. You have to be there, unfortunately, Rob. You work for Spreaker. You know, you have to be at them. But for some podcasters, some of these ones where they're kind of meetups and just kind of like powwows, I don't know how much I'm going to get out of them, you know, depending on what it is. Like, you know, maybe I'm missing something from some of these. But when I look at a lot of the speakers, I mean, like, geez, I've got you for free, Rob.
Well, you know, podcasters tend to have their own podcasts that they can present their ideas and get out there. So, I mean, I can see your point. I mean,
great if you're a speaker, right? You get a lot of recognition.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also about networking with people and meeting more people that are involved in the space and kind of spreading the word about podcasting. I mean, I think that there's a lot of new people that are getting involved in the space, and a lot of them don't know the history and the background and best practices and all this kind of stuff. And it's a big reason why I do this show every week, is to kind of further that agenda of getting the truth out there, because there's so much misinformation out there about how to podcast successfully, what is different about podcasting, what is the monetization approaches, the metrics, the methods of syndicating your show, which are so different than radio.
Right.
And I think that a lot of the radio folks, and this is one of the reasons I go to the NAB, just think radio when they think of podcasting, and it's not exactly that. So that's why a lot of that industry is having to kind of relearn their craft, because podcasting puts them in a little bit of a different aspect of audio production and audio distribution than they're used to in their comfort zone off of their broadcast towers. The expectation is different on the part of the listener. The formats are different. The monetization approach is different. It's more of a national, global medium. I mean, all these things are all factors that are different than local radio. So,
because they would love to, if they could somehow lump together podcasting and radio, right? Like, that, I mean, if they could, they would. If there is a way to just kind of put one umbrella thing under, all right, we're all doing the same thing. But it's really not. It's not. Building an audience is completely, in my opinion, different, right? Yeah. I mean, some people are listeners to radio because they must listen to radio. They're in their car. Like, they have only a few dials on the station. So, you know, out here in KFI, if you're going to listen to Ryan Seacrest or, you know, or the KFI talk station or the top 20, you know what I mean? Like, you have limited choices, where podcasting, it's the wild, wild west. Like, to get any recognition, you better do your homework. You better be marketing yourself. And that's where I think, Robin, now I'm like, you know, coming full circle here. We're spending way too much time on this. I'm sorry. But this is where I think the podcasting type events are great. Like, for example, for Pod Summit, which the ticket price is like $125, it's a one day event. That is like fantastic to me. That's a reasonable price. I can go there full day and do it. Now, I'm not dumping on what's the one here in Anaheim? Podcast Movement. Podcast Movement. I'm not trying to dump on it. That's like the big one and everything. But it's longer days. And frankly, I'm only going to be there 1 or 2 days. And here's the big secret. I don't think it's really a secret, but I learned this. If you have a 4 or 5 day podcast, there's really 1 or 2 hot days, right? I mean, the secret's out. Everybody knows it. The first day's set up, the last day's breakdown, and usually you have some big events that are happening midway in between, in my experience with these kinds of things. So if I'm spending $400 and they're saying, well, we've got 4 or 5 days worth of stuff, work-wise, I got to take off. Money-wise and everything, it's costing me money to take a day off from work. That's a vacation day I'm losing, if you're doing it that way. So I've got to equate all that. And if I'm only going to go 1 or 2 days, do I want to spend $400 or $500? But you have something like Pod Summit. It's a one-day thing, $125, boom, in and out the door. That I like. You know what I mean? So these podcast things, and not just podcasts, but trade shows, NAB and all this stuff, they stretch these things out for a flipping week. Who can afford this stuff? What podcaster can spend a week, you know, in Vegas of all places? You know what I mean? The next thing you know, you're going to a show and you're gambling and losing your wallet. Anyway, I'm ranting here, but I don't want people to be dissuaded from going, because I'm going, right? But some of them have more value, I think, at different stages in your podcasting life than others. That's just my 2 cents.
Your 10 cents. Yeah. I mean, I agree. It depends on where you are and what your goals are. I mean, a lot of people or podcasters or prospective podcasters go to Podcast Movement because they want to learn the latest techniques or the latest tricks or to optimize it or to do it. I think that the NAB is a little bit of a different event. It's like you said, it's more focused on radio and the radio industry learning about podcasting. So if you're not involved in the radio side, there's probably not a lot of value in going to the NAB until the NAB starts focusing on trying to educate kind of non-radio people in becoming podcasters. So,
and I know it's changed now, because at one point NAB kind of had this like, they were looking their nose down at podcasters, right? And I remember they had tried it, but they had this kind of general attitude, like, we're radio, we're better, period. That's it. We don't need you, type of thing. And they've opened up. You know, they even had their own – didn't they do like a combined podcast trade show and separate – right? Okay. So they embraced that. And then they kind of dialed it back a little. But I think they know that, like, I mean, it's here to stay, right? They got to figure out what to do with it, but it's here to stay. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, for a couple of years the New Media Expo co-exhibited with NAB. And so podcasting had its own exhibition area and things like that, but that whole relationship kind of fell apart. So, and the NAB has been a little slow on jumping back into it again. Because, I mean, a lot of podcasters were going to NAB back when that was happening, because there was a focused sub-event happening at the NAB that was focused on helping new podcasters or existing podcasters be successful. You know, until that happens again, it's a little bit of a challenge to try and get existing podcasters to go to NAB.
And then a side issue, and I know we got to let this go, but this is the thing. I think part of the problem is because podcasting has probably got like the business model, let's say, of podcasting isn't a great one, right? You're taking a product and you're giving it away for free. So sure. A lot of these podcasts, right? You create something, you're giving it for free. It's like, okay, now let's try and figure out how to make money. You kind of do it, you know, reverse the way businesses work. And so I think for podcasters, especially me, like, you know, I'm a penny pincher, I admit it. I look at the benefit of these shows. So if I'm going to learn something that's going to, you know, expand my show and I'm going to actually be able to make money, I'm all in, right? I'll spend the money on it. But if I'm spending $500-$600 for a week and I'm only going to be there for 2 days, then it starts to lose its luster. That's all I'm going to say about it, Rob.
Tell us what you really think, Alex.
And I believe in trade shows. I go to conferences. You know, I've gone to motivational conferences. I'm going to, as we've spoken, but you gotta weigh them. I just don't want to tell people, you know, and like, there's a lot of gullible podcasters I find, and they could be sold a bill of goods. And if you tell them you got to be at this podcast or something, or you're never going to make it, they'll try and do it. And like, they'll try and do it. The people that are really trying to make it.
Yeah, man.
I would. I would, sure. You know, if you said to me, Alex, you have got to be at this show. If you don't go,
Alex, you've got to be at this show.
Then I'd be there, right? Then I'd be there.
Yeah, of course, right? Because you're gung-ho. You want to make it happen, right?
Won't make it happen, but it's got to be an attractive pitch, too.
No, that's right.
Most podcasters are broke, man. I mean, they're like starving actors out here in LA. We're all the same. You know, it's like people are – they've usually got their full-time job, right, which, you know, luckily we have. And then, you know, not everybody has the luxury of, you know, being a professional podcaster. It'd be great, but it's rare. It's pretty rare.
That is true. Hopefully soon it'll be easier. So, but we shall see, right?
Well, with the monetization stuff – coming out. I mean, everybody's doing it. Spreaker's doing it. So.
Sure. Well, let's jump in and kind of move through the new Edison research. I know we've taken about half the show on that that whole thing, but that's okay. That's
long the tooth today.
Spontaneous combustion is what that was. So anyway, the new podcast research that came out basically has some interesting stats, and I know we've talked a little bit about research in the past on the show, but the kind of breakdown is 31% of podcast listeners, so a little less than a third, earn more than $100,000 a year, compared to 22% of non-listeners. So it indexes a little higher towards higher income and more educated listeners out there. And it looks like also that respondents to this survey also had a higher level of college degree education. So that's the other side. 63% of podcast listeners are employed full-time compared to 49% of the general population. They're more employed. They're better educated. They earn more money. So it sounds like it's a perfect match for advertisers, right, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, that's even better, I think, than the key demo, right? 100,000 or more. I thought that was pretty high. I mean, I think what's the average salary? The 40 or 50 grand per capita income. I forget what it is. Average. So that's pretty high, right? That's pretty high. And then what I was surprised, because I never really think about the unemployment numbers, the employed numbers, right? But I was surprised 63% of podcasters are employed full time. I don't know. I'm like, okay, yeah, I don't know. I think unemployed people have more time to listen to podcasts, I guess. that's a good number.
Well, they probably can afford the data plans and the devices that you need to the relatively expensive devices that you need to listen to this stuff. Yeah, I'm not necessarily surprised at all that.
And podcasts, really, if you think about it, Rob, right, could get you a job. I mean, how many podcasts are there about business, starting your own business, being successful in business? You know, I mean, hot. That's like kind of the hot thing. So,
and on the income disparity between podcasts users and non-users, the gap is narrowing as more and more mainstream Americans discover the medium. So hopefully the cost of acquisition of new listeners is relatively low. And we can keep growing this medium a little deeper into the U.S. population and, frankly, in the global population as well. The survey came back also saying that of the respondents listening to a podcast in the past week, it reached about 15% of the U.S. population, or about 42 million listeners just in the last week.
I don't know how you feel about it, but podcasting to me feels very American. Like, it just seems like an American endeavor.
English. You know, it's English, so it does tend to dominate around that, and podcasting started in the U.S. But podcasting is strong in other English-speaking countries as well.
Well, I don't know any famous Australian podcasters, or I'm sure in the U.K. Okay, fine, but I'm just trying to think. Like, it seems like it's like an American thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just like, the most popular podcasts I think in the world are all from the U.S.
And it is true that a lot of these American podcasts that you're referring to are heavily listened to in a lot of other countries around the world. Because the truth of the matter is that a lot of other countries in the world, English is the second language, right? So people will listen to an English podcast in another country that's primarily a local language country where people speak the local language, like in Spain or other non-English focused countries, but they'll still listen to English podcasts because they can understand English, but they struggle at pronouncing English or speaking English, or they feel uncomfortable speaking English.
Right.
There's not a lot of podcasts that are coming out in other languages that are getting wide listenership on a global basis, unless they're English spoken shows.
Well, so, for Spreaker, for example, I mean, I know it's a Italian based company, right? I mean,
yeah,
I think so. Primarily, I think the thrust of their business would be the United States. And yep. I don't hear, and maybe because my language settings on Spreaker too has something to do with this, right? But I don't hear a lot of Italian, or let's say take Spanish, for example. I don't hear a lot of Spanish, all Spanish podcasts. But I guess that's because like English is the world's language. if you're going to do it anyway, you might want to do it even with your accent in English, right? Because it'll just get more listeners. I guess that's kind of the theory behind it. But I don't see – I would think like with Spreaker especially, there'd be a huge Italian podcaster population.
There is, but if you happen to live in the U.S., you're going to primarily see U.S. Okay. content. If you're right. in Italy or Spain or whatever, the software knows that you're in those countries and will present that content.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be somebody's going to hear this, right? And go, Alex, I'm in here and, you know, in Spain or wherever. And they're going to say, I got a great podcast. Shut up. So I shouldn't be saying this anyway. I'm probably just not seeing it based on my location or even English. You know, if it says English, I'm not going to see something in Spanish.
And we don't want to upset, podcasters around the world thinking that we're snobby about English podcasting. Or U.S.-based podcasts is better than anybody else's. It's all content and it's all – there's these aspects of it that make it what it is, you know, and it's growing and it's progressing in all these other countries, and that's all a positive sign for the medium and for listeners out there. And if you can get access to English shows – I mean, if you look in iTunes, a lot of the shows that are in – all these other countries kind of like hubs pages for podcasting in iTunes or in the new Apple podcasting app, or I guess they did a rebrand. So they're not calling it the iTunes podcast area anymore. They're calling it the Apple podcasts area now. So that's a recent change that they made. I think that they're moving away from the iTunes brand, but anyway, let's get back to the study and the survey. Basically, among those weekly listeners, right, that we had talked about, the 15%, the average time spent listening to a podcast is between 1 and 3 hours for about 36% of those listeners. So it's a fair amount of content. That's like
a long time.
1 to 3 episodes, right, is what that – because after
I got it. I'm looking at it wrong. I thought maybe 1 to 3 hour podcast. Get a 3 hour pod individual adding up. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. So the study came back showing that after they've kind of crunched the numbers here, that the average length of a podcast that people are actually listening to out there is about an hour, which dovetails back to what we've said on this show, that the typical successful podcast duration is around 45 minutes. Our range is where the sweet spot of this medium is. There's a lot of people coming out saying that, you know, shorter is better, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, it may be the duration needs to be based on what the content is, not some arbitrary selection of a duration, right? That somehow a 10-minute podcast is better than a 30-minute podcast. It's not necessarily true. People will listen as long as they will listen, whether or not it's 10 minutes long or 30 minutes long.
Just not 3 hours. I can't get through it.
Well, there are successful podcasts out there that are getting tens of thousands of downloads that are three-hour shows, three-hour
episodes. I don't know how people do it. I don't know how you can listen to someone like whomever. I'm not going to name any names, but I mean, some of these 3-4 hours long. I can't do it. I don't have the time. Who's got the time? Yeah.
Well, some people do. They'll listen to it in pieces. They'll listen to the episode. They'll listen to a half an hour at a time across 3 or 4 days.
Crazy people.
It's binge listening, Alex.
I know. I've done it with Netflix and stuff over the weekend. I consumed the whole season.
Yeah, exactly. So, and especially as you start thinking about these serialized podcasts that are coming out, right, where they're kind of episodic. From a content perspective, where they're flowing from one topic that are related to each other across many episodes. And, you know, like the recent series that came out from Serial, the S-Town came out. That's kind of a serialized thing. It gets people to listen to it. It's kind of like television, right? And not all television shows are even serialized like that. A lot of television shows are standalone episodes, right, that don't have to be seen in the context of the old episode or the new episode to get the continuity of it. Though a lot of shows will have kind of like this underlying kind of red thread that runs through all the episodes that will keep that listener engaged. But a lot of the TV shows out there will have, you know, standalone episodes, right? So they're catering to those folks that are longtime series followers, but they're also able to cater to kind of people that come in and out of the content. So you kind of have that going on as well. But for 22% of these listeners, the average time was between 3 and 5 hours that they listen to every week. So there's almost a quarter of the listeners out there are listening to 3 to 5 hours a week of audio, of podcasts. So
that sounds about right.
Yeah. It says of those weekly listeners, they're typically listening to 5 podcasts in 7 days, which I guess makes sense. The average time spent with the format for weekly podcasters, this kind of rolls it all up, is 5 hours and 7 minutes. So that tells you a little bit of that hour, right? So that they were talking about. Podcasting, so this study came back saying podcast discovery is still difficult. I don't know, Alex, I mean, is that something that you agree with?
Yeah, we talked about this, was it the last show or the show before that? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know that's the big problem. I mean, I just think back at like the beginning days, it was even worse, right? I mean, there weren't all these different, you know,
apps,
aggregators and things like apps and all this stuff. And even the like the networks like Adore, and there's plenty of others, right? I guess that's the big problem with the internet period, right? Getting found. You can put up a website. I can put up alexxm.com, but good luck getting traffic, right? I mean, unless, you know, you've got unless you're famous, right? Unless you're famous, you already have a pre branded brand. It's terrible wording, but you know what I mean. You already have a product, you already have a brand, you're already known. And you're going to get traffic. But if you're just starting out, especially, we know this, Rob, your first 5-6 podcasts, nobody's going to really listen to. So it doesn't really matter if you screw up. It's difficult getting found. And there's tricks. It's tough. We all know about, the show notes and SEO. Okay, fine. Right. But that can only do so much as well. So nobody's really solved it. Whoever, figures out the algorithm or some way that I just put in, you know, whatever, better podcast show and everything comes up relevant. I'd be a multi-billionaire, and Rob, you and I would be in Tahiti somewhere having margaritas. But there isn't a one-stop shop from podcasting. It's all fragmented.
The only one-stop shop that exists today is the Apple Podcasts platform. Taking about 60% of the users of the medium right now. So,
but you know what? I got to say though, but they have not innovated, and I can just see someone else coming into the field using, you know, it's in the cloud, it's an app, whatever they do. But I could see someone stealing that crown. It wouldn't take much. I mean, when have they done anything really innovative in 20 years of podcasting with iTunes?
Well,
I mean, nothing.
Well, Alex, we're hearing and we're getting a sense that Apple is going to wake up here a little bit.
Sleeping giant. Okay.
They recently changed their brand, right? They went from iTunes podcasts to podcasts. So they're refocusing down and getting more focus. And I'm hearing rumblings that there's more announcements for podcasts coming from Apple. You know, who knows what they're up to?
So, but, okay. Well, that's encouraging. Yeah. I mean, you know, so they've got what I call the Uber effect, right? The taxi cab industry completely did not see Uber or Lyft coming, right? They had the market locked down. They figured everyone's coming to us. We don't need to innovate. There's nobody better than us, right? So what are they going to do about it? And they just got – they're shut down by an app. By an app, right? Because they didn't innovate. Now they come out with their own apps, which are absolute crap. They don't even work. So, you know, it's kind of the same effect. I call it the Uber effect. These companies who just sit there and think that we're the biggest kid in the block, so we don't have to budge. We don't have to do anything. And maybe they're waking up to that, Rob. That's a good sign. I mean, maybe they've finally figured it out, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing with radio. I have the same problem with radio. They are not innovative. The people I hear these DJs and these radio talk show hosts, people are like, "Well, we've got it locked down." Not for long. There are hungry podcasters out there that are going to swipe the crown from them. I'm telling you, they're going to put all these other radio guys out of business. There's so many podcasters I hear that are better than the crap I hear on the radio, Rob.
Yeah, that's exactly true. One of the most intriguing slides of the whole presentation was how long different types of listeners have been tuning into podcasts. So I wanted to kind of quickly run through that. It says of the listeners between 1 and 3 years is the most common. So most of the people that are listening to podcasts today have only been listening over the last 1 to 3 years, which is kind of in the serial time frame, right? So there has been a lot of people that have been attracted to the medium here recently. But for podcast subscribers, a quarter have been listening for five or more years. So about 25% of the audience out there has been engaged with podcasting for five or more years.
How do you ever stop really becoming a podcast listener? Like, once you've discovered them, how could you not?
Yeah,
stop?
Exactly.
Like, I don't know. It's just so convenient.
It's kind of like coffee. Once you start drinking it, you get hooked.
Right. Perfect.
And you consume more and more is the typical pattern that this research is showing. It says about 21% have been listening to podcasts for 3 to 5 years. So you can see there's a steady flow of new people coming into the podcasting medium. Given the largest share is 1 to 3 years, that's a good sign, I think, about the growth and the future of this medium. It's just going to keep plodding along. But the majority of the listeners that are out there, if you look at the 75% or 70%, have been stalwart listeners of the podcasting medium for a long time. So, you know, there's still a core base of listeners that is definitely there and continuing to stay there as we add new people. So that's always a good sign.
Yeah, we're always all concerned about getting new listeners. We forget about our faithful listeners,
right? Yeah.
You know, and I don't understand, like, anyone who loves radio or even like spoken word poetry stuff, why wouldn't you like podcasting? And how could you leave? It's the like audio crack of, you know, it's like the crack audio of audio. I don't know what I'm saying, but it's like, it's addictive. Like, podcasting's super addictive. It's practically free. It's so it's inexpensive, right? You don't have to pay for most podcasts.
Yeah.
And like, once you've heard one, even if you don't stick with that one, it's just, it's great information. It's usually very concise. If it's an interview, you're trying to learn something, you can really just like from one podcast, you could learn something that could change your whole business or your whole life. So I'm an addict, obviously, as you know, but I can't imagine listening to podcasts and going, oh, that's not for me, and never listening to another one again. I can't imagine that, but I guess it happens. Some people just maybe don't like it.
Yeah, if maybe they come across a show that turns them off and maybe they leave, but based on this research, it's showing that that's relatively rare. Some of the other kind of comment that came out of this survey is that, and it's maybe a little surprising, that content is not really what's king. It's the audience that's king in this medium. This medium is all about listeners. It's not about, you know, the content. I think a lot of the other media out there, television, movies, music, tends to be all about the content, right? The audience kind of takes a backseat to some of that stuff, right? Where podcasting, audience is the most important thing to the medium. I don't know what you think about that concept. I know podcasting is a lot about content, but it's not. But it feels like that the audience, since this is such an engaged listener, is more important than the content. What's your thought?
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, if the content sucks, you're not going to have an audience. And if you don't have an audience, you're not going to produce quality content, right?
But so it's also a very subjective thing. What is quality content? Quality content is based on what the audience will listen to.
And
it may not be under a strict definition of what people think quality content is in the same venue as what maybe the TV industry thinks of their quality content. Podcasting, there are shows out there that are very roughly produced, they're very long, very kind of not what you would consider to be quality content, that are getting huge listeners. And I guess that's where the distinguishing line is that audience is more important than content.
You know, there's a guy, it's funny you say that, there's a guy I just recently discovered on Spreaker, and he has I just found out about him. He was actually being interviewed on another show, and he's got a Spreaker, and it sounded to me like he was using Spreaker Studio to actually do it. He's got a huge following. I was like, who is this guy? So I started listening to him, and it's a little rough in the beginning because you can hear him clicking buttons and stuff, and the intro music's a little soft and things like that. But it's just what you're getting at. You know, it's not completely polished, right? He's not in a studio. Doesn't have doesn't have serials money. Doesn't have 10 people behind the scenes producing this flipping thing. But it's the content. He's a Trump supporter. He talks politics and things, and he's just getting a ton of like press. He's been in the media and stuff recently. So you're right there, Rob. Like, I would agree with that. That some people find a niche, right? And if you find that audience, it doesn't have to be. you know, I don't know. It doesn't have to be a national audience like a Bill O'Reilly or something, I guess we get. But if you've got like people, you know, 50,000 people, right, downloading your podcast every week, that's a good size audience, you know, and that could be a very narrow group of people. Trump supporters is, I guess, a lot. There's a lot of Trump haters too. But, you know, it could be very niche and you could still have a good size audience. Even not having the most polished delivery and intro music. I mean, like some of the intro music and stuff is like, you know, I heard someone recently, it sounded like their kids sang their intro music. That's fine. It was cute. You know, it was actually kind of, it kind of worked for them, you know, because it sounded low budget. But, you know, that's not going to be the show that's going to get, you know, they're not going to put that on KFI out here or something, right? Or iHeartRadio, right?
So, anyway. Well, and the show that I do every week on Saturday called The New Media Show, it, newmediashow.com, that show gets about 12,000 downloads, and it's just
there's no
prep for that show. Todd and I just turn on our webcams and pull up our microphones and talk for an hour and a half.
No intro. It's yeah. really it's like a conference. I've been there a bunch of times. You've seen me, but yeah. I will say though, you do have pretty high production values even with that. I know it's that not Twitch. What's it called? What's the platform?
We're on Facebook Live and YouTube Live.
No, but you were using something else before. What was that platform? There was another platform at one point you were using. I forget the name of it now. It was the same type of thing. It was the same type of concept. But what I'm saying is
died.
When I... Oh, okay. But I remember what I'm saying is I remember when I was watching the show, I could see your studios. And he has a beautiful studio, right? And you have a nice studio. You have nice mics and everything. So I got to be honest, your quality is... a little step above the average. You know, most people, you know what I mean? I mean, he's pretty good, you know, equipment you guys had. He has a really nice studio. It looks like he put some money into that.
Oh yeah. Well, he's got a TriCaster. You know, he's got like a $20,000 TriCaster in there.
What's a TriCaster?
It's basically a video production studio in a box. So, and it just basically sits under his desk. And he's got like four high quality video cameras. He's not using webcams that are pointed at him. He's got like five monitors or something like that in his studio, and he's just a guy that likes gadgets and he's a geek. So
I want him to come set up my studio in my home because that stuff looks nice. He looks like I don't have, you know, 30 grand to spend like he probably did.
Oh yeah, well he's probably spent 50 on his studio.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Yeah, what do I know?
Exactly.
Wow.
So he's. But anyway, kind of moving on from that, the last part of this Share of Ear study kind of broke out where people are listening to audio. It's the Share of Ear part of the study. And what they did was they took overall what Americans' time spent listening to audio sources, like what percentage of people overall, I'm talking about the whole U.S. population, listen to AM/FM radio, and it's about 54%. But they also have owned music, right? So they listen to their music on CDs, and that's about 15%. They stream audio, like off of like a Pandora or something like that, about 15% of their time. 7% are listening to Sirius and XM, which surprises me that 7%. And another 5% are listening to TV music channels, Alex, on cable.
I've never been able to get into those. I've tried because you get like, you know, 1,000 channels with every kind of musical taste. But
exactly.
I don't know. It's weird.
And podcasts come in at 2% of the overall share of audio listening. So, but the next slide is when you become a podcast listener, right? What's the share of time that you spend with audio sources once you've discovered the light? It changes a lot. So the same breakdown, this is all US, so these are people that are listening to podcasts. What is their time spent listening to all audio sources once they've discovered podcasts? It basically cuts in half their AM/FM listening time to 25%. Then there's podcasts, which is 30%. So you can see podcasts have actually overtaken AM/FM radio as time spent listening,
Rob, I got
once that listener has discovered podcasts.
Yeah, and Rob, I got to say one thing that I found surprising here. I'm saying it's surprising, but I had suspected this for many years, and I've suspected this all along. When you look at the slide here, I know our viewers or listeners can't see it, but there's Sirius XM, right? And the time spent listening to all audio sources, 4%. Now, when I saw that, I said, yep, I flippin' knew it, because I have always thought that Sirius satellite radio is completely overrated, totally overrated. They have no listeners. They're overpaying Howard Stern. I don't want to say shady business tactics, but I've heard this from many users. They kind of like get suckered into these 2 and 3 year accounts. I mean, you've probably heard, I don't know if you know anyone who has it, but you get a new car, you sign up for a trial. You didn't know that you're paying for like a year or 2 years, and they kind of get, I hate those kind of deals where they sucker people in, but regardless, 4%, Rob?
Yeah.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
It's nothing. I mean, it's like if I wanted to do, let's say
podcasts
Sirius
are getting
Alex,
30%.
I mean, my God, if they came to me and said, we'd love to put your show on Sirius, I'd say, well, what are you going to pay me? You know, I mean, like, I don't know if it's worth it. I would definitely not go and like go into the studio and work for these people because they have no audience. Nobody's watching. It's like CNN. And when you look at like the average like viewers they have every night, you realize they're not really that big. And so everyone always says Sirius and they're paying Howard Stern. What is he making? $100 million a year. So you think they've got all these listeners. But no, they're charging each of their listeners 20 or 30 bucks. Right, a month. Some of them have signed on for 2-3 years. So if they've got, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 subscribers, that's all I guess they need to keep it going. They're going to fail eventually. I don't see how is it sustainable.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I don't know their books, but you know, whatever.
They're kind of
but
in trouble, I think, in the long run.
They gotta be, Rob. They gotta be, man. Yeah. And you know it. Okay, I'm not going to say too much. I'm not trying to throw them under the bus. But when I saw this, I said, yeah, my suspicions are correct. And you'd probably know more than me. I mean, I'm sure you could probably find a lot out at the NEB show, right? People will be talking about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm gonna raise the topic, that's for sure.
You should. you should, man. And then because I'm sure everyone's curious. And then I see like iHeartRadio and the advertising revenue that they're bringing in, you know, $60 billion or whatever the heck it was. I forget the figure.
I don't think it was $60 billion. But,
I know. I'm over.
They would love it to be $60 billion.
They would, right? No. But, I mean, they had some incredible ad revenues, right? So just – and this was just, I think it was at iHeartRadio, but there's Cumulus. I mean, there's only 2 or 3 big guys running the whole shebang at this point. So when you see you would have kind of hoped at one point Sirius would take off, so there was another option for people. But they're dying. There's nothing I want to listen to on there.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but
that's 4%, Rob. That's crazy, man. I don't know how they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, it's a dying medium. That's
yeah,
for sure.
They're not. Yeah.
It's a dying medium. So anyway, if you want to reach Alex or me, if you have a comment or question about the show, please send me an email. I'm at rob@spreaker.com, and that's with an R, Spreaker. And I'm also on Twitter at Rob Greenlee, and that's with 2 E's on the end. Alex, how can a listener reach you?
I'm at alex@alexexum.com is my email. You can get me on Twitter at alexexum. And my YouTube channel, please subscribe, is youtube.com/alexexum. I know we don't have time, Rob. I'll just briefly say this. I need all the subscribers I can get because AdSense and YouTube has screwed all the content creators and they're demonetizing videos. So my revenue has gone in the toilet. It's like half right now. So if you could subscribe and watch a few videos, it would be greatly appreciated by your good friend Alex.
Wow. That's unfortunate that that's what's happening over at YouTube. I know it's going to negatively impact a lot of small content producers.
It is. It already has. They're already taking a massive cut. And Rob, some of these YouTube channels have gotten so big, they have staff. They're going to have to fire people. I mean, you've got 10 people working on, you know, 5 video productions a week or something. Guess what? Your revenue's cut in half by YouTube. Yeah, 5 people are getting fired. I mean, this is not good for anybody. And I'll be honest with you. I'm glad Spreaker has a monetization system. I hope it gets bigger because people are going to have another outlet because it's not – YouTube may become unfeasible, Rob. Every day I'm getting a notification they're sending me, we don't think your video is advertiser friendly. I did one on North Korea, of all things. It's in the news every day. Everybody's advertising on CBS, NBC, right? I do one on North Korea. No, we don't like it. We can't do it. And it's just like, oh, but come on, really? Every little thing they're flagging, Rob, it's getting scary. It's getting scary. This is censorship. This is the censorship everyone was terrified about finally coming in. They're calling everything fake news. And if they deem you up on high from Mount Olympus, they sit there, right, Rob, stroking their white beards, saying, oh, fake news, not fake news. He's fake. He's not. You can listen to this. You can't listen to that. It's getting ridiculous, man. Yeah. That's why podcasting and Spreaker, I've always thought Spreaker is such a powerful platform, because anybody can have a voice. Anybody can say something that will go viral and get millions of views. That's what they hate. That's what they hate.
Yeah.
That's where the real fight. Anyway, so I'm sorry. Subscribe today. YouTube.
Power to the man, right? Is that what you're saying?
Power to the man. Power to the people. Power to the podcaster, Rob.
Power to the podcaster. Oh, that's right. The man is the problem, right? Power to the podcaster.
Yeah, we don't like the man. We like the podcaster power people. Okay. Podcaster power people.
All right. Well, Spreaker has a Twitter account at Spreaker, and you can definitely go check out. There's a steady stream of information being posted there, and Spreaker has a website, Spreaker.com. Plus, we also have a blog, blog at Spreaker.com. But let's talk really, really quick about smart speaker ownership trends, which is really what we're talking about is the Alexa and the Google Home. And there's a lot of talk about Apple coming out with a basically an Alexa killer using Siri. So the drama is building around these smart speakers, which is a fairly new industry or a new device platform, I guess might be a better way of saying it. But there is some ownership trends that are happening around the smart speaker category that's out there. And the reason I'm mentioning it here is that more and more podcasts are being consumed on these smart speakers. You basically just tell Alexa the name of the show that you want, and it's probably available through the TuneIn app if you have submitted your show to TuneIn. But more and more, there's... there's apps being built for that platform using a kind of app. It's an equivalent to an app called Skills. So you can basically write a little script that will enable you to have your podcast available on the Alexa platform. So it's easier for people to just ask for your show, and it will find it very quickly and play it for you. But the ownership information that's coming out about this is really interesting because it's growing at a really steady percentage across a wide spread of demographic groups. So if I just looking at male and female, it's about 11% for male and female of ownership of these things. So you typically don't see this kind of even acceptance of a device or platform across age groups, demographic groups, and various, you know, kind of groups out there, like what we're seeing happen with these smart speakers.
Now, Rob, I hate to sound like a male chauvinist or something here, but when I saw that number, I was like, I've never seen a balance that close, 11 and 12%. Yeah. I'm never like, that's crazy. I'm like, wait a second, hold on. Usually you'll see something, I don't know, like, you know, 30% male, you know, whatever. It's like, such a close call. It's almost the exact same. I've never seen that before. That's just a really weird number. I was like,
well,
really?
I think what it tells me is that there's going to be huge adoption of this. This is going to be a device platform that's just going to scale to huge numbers. I mean, this is even more widely accepted than even smartphones.
Well, I always thought this. I was like, I don't think I'd get one. This isn't the product for me. But then I always think, why is everybody else getting into this game? So I know it's going to be a big deal. Like, just because I didn't jump on the bandwagon in another couple of years, I may be like, oh, I got to get one of these things. Because they're all getting in on it, right, Rob? They know better than I do. Google knows, like, what people are going to buy. Amazon knows what people are going to buy. They've got the algorithms, not me. They'll make me want to buy it. That's how it works. I may not want it now. They'll figure out how to push my buttons to make me want that thing.
I mean, if you look at the age groups that are going there, the Gen Zs, the Millennials, the Gen X, the Baby Boomers, and the Silent, which I think is the older gray generation, they're all adopting this at almost the same rate.
Yeah, it's very even.
The Gen Zs, which is our, I think, our pre-employment age group – is actually at 8%. So they're not even earning any income yet, the Gen Z. So they're getting their own Lexus. I think that their families are buying them for them. And kids are talking to Alexa for all sorts of things, right? They're asking her questions. They're learning things from this thing too.
They use it for everything. My cousin uses it for everything. You can order food. You can ask it the weather. You know, what's the traffic? Should I, play this song? Play this podcast? They use it for everything. My cousin loves the thing. I told you the one in Washington. He used to work for Amazon. They sell like hotcakes, man. People love these things.
Well, they're only $50. So
yeah,
you
that's
can
not
get,
bad.
I mean, you can get one for $50, and it's like this little hockey puck size device that you just plug in and connect to your Wi-Fi network, and you can get you access to all sorts of stuff.
And you know the other radio players that are hooked up with like Sonos and things like that that have like iHeartRadio, internet radio type things, Rob?
Yeah,
those are great, but they tend to be spendy, right? Maybe because the audio quality is a little better, whatever, but they can be a little costly. And I've always thought that would be great to have. I listen to shows on iHeartRadio. I'm on iHeartRadio, right? So I'd like to have that. But this is more this can, basically do the same thing, right? So why not for, a third of the price? Some of those things are $200 or whatever. So the other
one. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, let's move on. I just wanted to mention really quick that there's a great article up on blog.spreaker.com that was written by a staff member on the Spreaker team, Chara, and she wrote an article, How to Save Time and Money with the Right Home for Your Podcast. And it's basically an article talking about how much easier it is now to do a podcast, and you throw Spreaker into the mix, and it really becomes a fairly inexpensive solution that has terrific tools. All you really need is a basic microphone and a laptop or a tablet or a mobile phone, and you're podcasting. So it's so if you want to read more about that, go check out blog.spreaker.com, and you can read all about that topic.
Rob, I got to tell you briefly, because I know you're trying to wrap this up here. Thanks. But this article is funny because over the weekend I got a comment. It was very long and it was well thought out. So I read it. It's not like, Alex, you suck. Right. It was a good one. And it was on, which podcasting service should you use? And I had compared Spreaker and things like that. Now, a lot of the services have changed. Even Spreaker's plan has changed. I updated the video, but what I'm getting at, she worked for Podbean. And she said, well, I'm a little biased here. I work for Podbean, but let me explain some of our plans. Right. So she explains her plans. I'm like, okay, fine. And I realize how fast all of these services are changing. Because, the video was a good 6-7 months ago or whatever. But when I went back to look at what she was talking about, a lot had changed with Podbean. They had a free plan. And then some of the other ones, I said, well, maybe I should do a little due diligence here and check. And a lot of them had changed. So all of these services are rapidly changing. I know a lot of it's because they're trying to figure out, the best way to, balance some of the free services with paid monetization and things like that. But I got to tell people that are on Spreaker, because that's what we have, I think, primarily are Spreaker users here. You got a good deal here, because even when I went back to her, I said, look, I'm looking at your plan. I signed up for a free account. Just to look at it. You're offering 55, megabytes, and that's, going to be about two shows or three shows at an hour at 128 gigabytes, right? So, when you look at all of these things, Spreaker's a pretty good deal. They should read this this article, because it makes some good points as well. I'm not trying to sell my video, right? But I'm just saying Spreaker's, when you look at all the cost benefits, Rob, with all these other podcasting services, even Podbean, I'm not knocking them, but she commented thinking she was going to sway me, right? And I went, I think Spreaker's the way to go. Sorry, honey. So she was nice and all, nothing against her. But anyway, just side issue.
Yeah, that's great. So go check it out. If you're thinking about podcasting and you're listening to this, it might be a good outline to kind of explain how Spreaker can be a solution for you. So definitely go check it out. Well, before we wrap up the show, Alex, I wanted to quickly run through a couple of comments that we got from some listeners back from episode 107 about doing great conversations in your podcast. But there's just a variety of comments in here. Did you want to take one of these that jumped out at you, Alex?
Yeah, sure. Well, can I take the last one just because I have a little comment there. I just thought I'd mention Tamara. I hope I'm saying it. Is it Tamara or Tamara?
Yeah.
I hope we're saying it right because, you know, once or twice I think we've wondered about that. But she said that she updated her podcast artwork and she used some of your suggestions, Rob.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Yeah, so I looked at it and I got to say, good work. It looks cleaner. It's a little easier to read. And I think she did a good job. And, you know, people should go check out her podcast. And it's Shelf Addiction. I got to say, I love that title. The first few times, like, I just looked at the title, you know, Self Addiction.
Yeah, exactly.
But
you have to look at it. It forces you to think. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And it's a clever podcast name. And I liked it. And I will say that I like her the font that she's using. Is just a lot more pleasant to the eye for me. It's just you can quickly read it. So I think she did a great job with it. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's, you know, it's okay to update your cover art on a fairly regular basis. I wouldn't make dramatic changes to your cover art, but if you can make little tweaks of improvement, maybe making things bolder, making things stand out, be a little clearer with what your show's all about, but you don't want to dramatically change it quickly because people get used to seeing that icon as a reference to your show. And so you have to be careful when you make changes to things like that over time. Because that's really the first thing that people see when they consider subscribing or getting your show is that cover art. People,
and I think she did a really good job of it. It's, yeah. You know what I mean? It is kind of similar to the old look.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And so we had a few other comments too. Linda Irwin wrote, I've made some wonderful friends through Spreaker I would not have met otherwise. So it gets back to this whole concept of community. There is a community at Spreaker of, you know, thousands and thousands of people producing content and listening to content. So we're really creating that kind of dynamic atmosphere. Tamara also wrote about, so I know all about the interview woes. It's indeed a lot of work when doing a lot of interviews. It's definitely not fun all the time, especially when talking to people that are technically challenged.
Yeah, well, we all go through it. Trust me. I would agree with that
because what you're trying to maintain is the quality of the audio. And sometimes people do it from devices or phones or whatever that just don't sound very good.
Yeah. And Rob, just to say one other thing before you, if you're going to read another one here, I just wanted to say back to the previous comment where she said the community here on Spreaker. Yes. That's the one thing I like about Spreaker too. I think if anything, that is what Spreaker has as an advantage. And I'd like to see them exploit that more, like come up with, you know, more ways for people to connect and sharing tools and whatever it is, even if it's just filling out, more keywords or categories that you're interested in to connect you with other people. Maybe put something on there where it's easier, to find like-minded podcasters that can interview, or a section maybe there that says, hey, I'm open for interviews, you know, contact me. Something like that. Like, that's the thing about Spreaker that I think no other podcast platform that I can think of, Rob, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know them all, has. Like, Spreaker does have a community, and some shows are fully based on that community. I mean, they're Spreaker users, and they all call into the same line, and they're basically doing their shows with other people, but it's like this whole, it's like a big conference call. I don't know how else to explain it. I don't know if you even call it a podcast, but I'd like to see this. I'm just telling you, Rob, because you're the guru, and you've got the ear of the developers and all the sales guys and all those guys. Like, exploit that social aspect of it more. And I don't know how you do that. If I knew it, I'd be, you know, making I'd be running freaking Spreaker. But, you know, how do you do that? Like, how do you make this community that Spreaker has that's already huge? I mean, you know the numbers, hundreds of thousands of users, but to connect them more, make them more I don't know what I'm trying to get at, Rob. Do you follow me? Exploit it. Make it bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that there's probably more ways that we can inspire people to comment and to have some more interaction with the shows. And I mean, it's happening right now. I mean, it happens around this show. It happens around lots of other shows. I've seen shows on the platform that have 6,000 comments each episode.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like people are engaging with each other. And oftentimes those conversations are not focused on the show. They're focused on the community talking to themselves about things that have nothing to do with the show. It's
right.
So,
exactly.
So those are connections and contacts that that community have with each other spans even the actual show. The show can be just a reason to get together, you know.
And Rob, is there a reason why, and stop me, you know, whenever you want, you've had enough suggestions, but that you can do an at or a hashtag, or at least when someone makes a comment, you can comment to them directly so that instead of it, you know, it looks like you're commenting on the show, it's going directly to them and they get a note. Like, is there a way that – have they thought about that?
There's probably a way of doing it. Yeah, I would say that.
Like maybe a hashtag.
Something that the team I don't think has thought about doing yet. But I think it, you know, it's a very similar thing to what people do on Instagram or on Twitter or these other platforms. And because each user of Spreaker typically has an account, right? So there should be a way to cross-link those things.
And in YouTube, you know, if you can comment – instead of just commenting under the video, which you can do, you can also comment under someone's comment so it directly goes to them type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to give these guys more work. I'm sure they're overworked as it is. But you know what I mean? To make it more social. So if I want to I mean, I could be doing a show about podcasting completely unrelated to Spreaker Live. And I go, you know, Rob might, you know, like this and just, you know, hashtag Rob in it. And then you get a notification. Hey, Alex just did a show on podcasting. You might want to hear that type of thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
No,
that's true. Well, Alex, I think we should wrap it up. I think we've gone the full Monte today.
So. You got it. I've got my clothes on here, but yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay. All right. So anyway, well, thank you for doing the show again, Alex, and thank you for listening to this live show today. It's great to have you along. We carried you for a little bit longer than we typically do, but we appreciate you being here and sticking it out with us. Full Monte. So come back and listen to us next week if you have time. Or if you don't have time to listen live, then just check us out on demand in our app or off of the website. That's the great thing about podcasting is always there for you. So
you must listen.
Exactly. Well, thank you and have a great week. And thanks for listening to the Spreaker Live Show.